everyone, and welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. It's the podcast where we watch Muppet Treasure Island 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Anthony Strand.
And I'm your other host, Ryan Rowe.
And joining us today, we have a return guest, a longtime friend. Guest, introduce yourself.
I am Carolyn Wiesner, a longtime Tough Pigs member.
That's right. It's a delight to have you back. Were you here for Christmas Carol? I don't think so, right?
You didn't ask me for Christmas Manhattan. Carol, and that's fine because I had a baby. So.
Yeah, that's right. You were busy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I did Manhattan.
You're right. I'm glad you're back.
And you told me on Manhattan that I'd only be doing sad clips from now on, but I'm not sure Treasure Island actually has any really sad scenes. So
there's some introspective scenes, but maybe not outright sad like Christmas Carol has.
There are a lot of scenes that are sad in the sense of I'm sad to be watching them.
Oh.
Okay. Well, then I guess this counts.
And what happens in these minutes? Jim and the boys hang out in the galley for a little while, and then they meet Captain Smollett. So we start with Long John Silver saying, "There's many a man lost a leg and worse in service of the king," which is true. I mean, he's not wrong, but is also an extremely grisly thing to say to a child.
Yeah, yikes. I mean, what's worse than a leg? That's the mind reels.
Right.
You know, I live in a rural community. There's lots of old guys that like to gross kids out, so sure. It didn't surprise me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One thing I briefly wondered is which king he might be referring to. Anthony, am I correct in thinking that there's no indication in the book as to what year this takes place?
So as we've discussed in the book, it has the 17-.
Okay, right. So date. It's, yeah.
But the I can't remember. I can go grab it. I can pull it out right back here if you want me to. The Annotated Treasure Island places it in 1759 for reasons that I no longer recall.
Okay. So then, yeah, I just looked up the Wikipedia article for British monarchs. And so I was going to say, based on 17 something, that it was probably one of the Georges was the king at the time, because George the first, second, and third were apparently in consecutive to each other. So you said 1759?
Yes.
Okay, then that would be King George the second, who reigned from 1727 to 1760. So
right.
That's who many a man are losing legs and worse in service to.
They're doing it. They're out there doing it.
It's all for George the second.
Mm-hmm. And then
is that indicating that they're all supposed to be the king's men on that ship? Because they don't seem
he said, so in the previous clip, Long John says that he was serving under, what is it, Admiral
Hawk?
Like Admiral Hawk, yeah. So he just lost his leg earlier in his lifetime. Okay. On a Navy ship is what he's implying.
Okay. No longer in service to the king.
Right. So it was presumably right. Still George the second, though, if we're 1 year.
Well, yeah. And if his reign started in 1727. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, now on this voyage, Long John is working in the private sector, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is.
All right. Got it.
He is. If Long John was going on the TV show Chopped, it would say private chef. Personal chef to Captain Abraham Smollett under his name.
Yes, there you go.
And then I hope that Joe edits that together.
Yep, and then I hope so too. And then he'd be like, you know, earlier in my life I lost my leg, and that's what I'm playing for. Prove that a man with one leg can still win $10,000.
That sounds extremely feasible, plausible for a reality show.
Chopped is awesome. What a great show. And we're going to hear more about Chops later in this.
We are.
Eggman.
Isn't that exciting?
But before that, Long John Silver jokes around about a cannibal eating his fingers. And what do we think about this? What do we think about cannibal jokes?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a fun gag when he holds up his hand and it looks like he's missing fingers. And then he shows that they're still really there. It reminds me of the detachable thumb trick that you can fool kids up to a certain age with by like putting your thumb on your, I'm demonstrating, I know the listeners can't see me, but like put your thumb on your other hand and make it look like you're removing it.
Did you do that to your nephews?
I have done that to, I think, all of my nephews. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes.
Love it.
But yeah, and they do fall for it for a second. And then when he shows them, they all kind of laugh like sheepishly.
They all laugh. They just share a great laugh together. That's what I love. Like, they're all just laughing.
Oh, yeah.
And then Long John, apparently forgetting that Rizzo exists, says, "Oh, you're a fine pair of lads, that ye are." Even though Rizzo is still in the room, right?
Oh, he is? I thought he was off doing...
I think he's still in mid-chicken. Like, last time we saw him...
Yeah, as far as we know, he's still...
He was face deep in the roast chicken or whatever.
Well, I guess we just saw him with a big belly, having just eaten the chicken.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But he is still in the room, for sure. Yeah.
I think so, unless he rolled out.
Who knows?
Well, maybe he's determined that Rizzo is not a fine lad.
Which is a reasonable conclusion, in my opinion. Yeah.
So he's like, "You two are fine lads. That guy over there is like just a glutton."
Yes. Yeah. But then he does add, "Bright as buttons, the lot of ye," which might include Rizzo.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be bright, but not good.
Yeah, that seems like him. That actually does seem like Rizzo. That seems like an accurate description of Rizzo. He is bright, but not good.
Sure.
So then,
is that lawful evil? Is that what that
one is? Yeah. I think so. That's right.
And then meanwhile, Fozzie as Squire Trelawney might be good, but not bright.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's, all right.
Yeah. He's Fozzie's, definitely not right. Fozzie's chaotic good.
Something like that.
And then speaking of old Fozzie, next up we hear a ringing bell and then the voice of Frank Oz says, "All hands on deck," but it's not Fozzie.
No.
It's our old pal, Sam the Eagle, who is weirdly the like ascendant Muppet star of the 90s movies.
Yeah.
After having essentially cameo roles in all three Jim era movies. You know, he has about two lines in each one.
I wonder why that was, but
yeah, I mean, it's just one of these like minor backstage guys, you know, really.
Yeah.
So I think that's why, but then for whatever reason, they're doing British period pieces. He has like a nice feature role in both of the Christmas Carol and this.
Yeah, this I think is, well, so I guess he'll have a bigger role even than this in Muppets Most Wanted, but this is his second biggest role in a Muppet movie, I would say.
Yeah, it's certainly his biggest up to this time.
Yeah.
The original trilogy, you didn't really have a lot of call for a stern Muppet in a more major role, but when you're adapting old literature, I guess you're going to have some stern characters.
I think that's right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
be in Pride and Prejudice?
Who would Sam be in Pride and Prejudice? Oh boy. I'm sure
many people on the internet have figured this out.
I mean, Here's the thing. Sam's actually not bad casting for Mr. Darcy. Like, people talk about it, how it has to be Christian Bale or whatever, but like Mr. Darcy is a sourpuss. That's kind of his whole deal.
Hmm.
And then opposite Janice, I guess.
Yeah, just like on the sitcom, right? When Sam fell in love with Janice.
Yeah.
Remember when that happened? Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
What a time. What a time. But Sam in this one is so here's that chop reference that I mentioned. He goes, "Chop, chop, look lively now. The captain will be here soon." And I can't imagine that maybe I am the only one, but every time I watch this movie and Sam says, "Chop, chop," it reminds me of the PlayStation 1 game, Parappa the Rapper, which the first boss in the game is named Chop, Chop, Master Onion.
Oh, wow. I played that at a friend's house back in the day, but I did not absorb it enough to remember that.
My cousins had it.
I think I played it on an emulator in like the last 10 years and didn't get very far. So
is that right? Yeah, my cousins had it, so we used to play it all the time.
Wow.
So anytime that Sam says, "Chop, chop, look lively now," I say, "Kick, punch, it's all in the mind. If you want to test me, I'm sure you'll find the things I teach you. I'm sure to beat you, but nevertheless, you'll get a lesson from teacher. Now kick." Anyways.
Look at that, some bonus rapping from Anthony.
I was going to say, I'm so glad I got rap.
But like, I think that game is one of the reasons why I do that all the time. You know, like,
sure.
I absorbed that game as I was like 12 or 13 when it came out.
So it wasn't just the Fruity Pebbles or Cocoa Pebbles commercial.
It was the Cocoa Pebbles commercial. It was Adam's Family Values, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
You know,
milestones in entertainment.
Yep. Yep. Oh. The 90s. What a time. What a time. And then, well, did you, but anyways.
Did you happen to look into the origins of the phrase chop chop?
No, did you?
Yes, I did.
What is it?
I found an article. So I was wondering if it might be an anachronism here. And I found, because it sounds odd in this time period, an article from NPR's Code Switch. They explained that it probably originated from a Cantonese word. I'm probably going to get this wrong, but cop, K-A-P, I guess that's transliterated. The word means make haste, as well as some similar sounding equivalent words in Mandarin and Malay. And they said it was most likely picked up by English sailors who sailed the Asian seas and heard those words and adapted them into the English slang chop chop. And the article also noted that the word is generally always used with a pretty condescending tone, which I hadn't really thought about, but it's true. If you're a kid and your parent is telling you, like, come on, we gotta go, put your shoes on, chop chop, like, it's never said in a nice way. It's always kind of like the person saying chop chop is annoyed with the other people that they're saying it to.
So it is feasible that it's historically accurate that Mr. Arrett would be famous.
I didn't write down the dates that they mentioned, but it was 1800s, so I don't know. It might be a little bit too early for it.
Yes, unlike everything else in this movie.
Right, the Star Trek reference earlier was spot on.
Right, mm-hmm. The Mickey Mouse joke, yeah.
Right.
But anyways, when we see Sam the Eagle, when we, the audience, see Sam the Eagle, Jim asks who that is, and young Squire helpfully says that it's Mr. Arrow, the first mate. A capital fellow.
Yeah, I guess he is. He's pretty capital in this movie.
He is. He's actually a decent guy. But what Fozzie actually says is, oh, that is Mr. Arrow, the first mate, which makes him sound more like Grover than usual, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Fozzie is, I mean, I'm sure you've said this many times, that Fozzie is completely out of character in this movie. Just
beyond
playing a role. I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, he basically looks and sounds like Fozzie, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'm not crazy about it.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing about this movie, and indeed about cinema. I love it when I think of great moments in movie history.
It's Mr. Bimbo all the way.
Mr. Bimbo every time. He's been to the moon twice. That's so funny, you guys. It's just comedy.
I'm going to take all of that just out of context and just that clip of you saying all those things.
I love comedy so much, Ryan.
As a bonus episode.
Good. A bonus episode.
And what Anthony really believes about Muppet Treasure Island.
That's what I'm going to do. Good. I like that you're Howard Stern and I'm George Takei in this scenario.
Oh.
By the way.
I don't know that specific reference.
Oh, that's what "oh my" is. He said it on Howard Stern.
Oh, that
interview.
They just took the
and they just use it all
out of context. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Howard Stern turns out to not be a great guy, huh? Anyway.
No, he sure didn't. Which is not a shock, right?
I mean, I never thought he was a great guy.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were avid Stern listeners in the
90s. No, I've never heard an episode.
This is a tangent, obviously, but I've always been baffled at some people who are fans of Howard Stern, who I kind of assumed would have better taste than that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. And yet you are him and you're playing the same pranks on me.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
So cool, Ryan. But anyways, what I like though here that I never thought about before is after Fozzie says that Samuel Arrow is a capital fellow, we get this close-up of Long John cocking his eyebrow, looking suspicious.
Yeah,
I was going to say that I think Tim Curry's eyebrow is one of the MVPs of this whole clip.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
And does manage to communicate a lot there.
So he's kind of just thinking, like, that's the guy I got to watch out for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also that maybe he knows him by reputation. He's like, oh, God, that guy. Yeah.
Next, we hear fanfare, and Mr. Arrow says, the captain approaches. Then we cut to a human man driving the coach, just a coach driver played by a human. But who's blowing the horn?
It's J.P. Gross.
Scary uncle.
Why, J.P. Gross, which makes this the second movie in a row that he's in, but Scooter isn't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's really sad, isn't it?
Yeah, Scooter does not appear on screen in this or Christmas Carol at all. He'll be back in Muppets from Space. yeah. selling Gonzo
Richard
t-shirts.
Scooter played Jim Hawkins in a different universe.
That would have been good. I think of all the available Muppet options, that might be the best one.
Yeah.
Maybe not for a full movie, though. Maybe just for a sketch.
Right. Yeah. Well, and as I think we might have talked about on Christmas Carol, David Rudman, who ended up playing Scooter many years later, was around in these days. Like, he could have started playing Scooter in 1992. I kind of don't know why he didn't. It seems like such obvious casting. I don't know.
It seems like they just decided they didn't really need Scooter or something, and they didn't want to, or maybe it felt too sad to them.
Scooter was too close to Richard, maybe.
Right. I think Scooter and Ralph a little bit, although he spoke a little bit, but it seems like there were a few characters that they were just very hesitant to recast right away, which probably was a mistake, because then, like, I don't know. I just remember when Muppets Tonight was new on the air, people were saying, like, where are the Muppets I know? Who are all these new guys? So they probably should have.
Yeah. Didn't the whole fan community freak out when Ralph said, oh, yeah, one time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of Brooks episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
What a time. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. And then, so they're driving up. JP Gross is blowing his horn. And Sam is telling everyone to step aside, make way for the captain. Lallygaggers will suffer his wrath. And then Gonzo asks if the captain is bad-tempered, and Sam responds in the affirmative. Yes. Is he bad-tempered? The man is a raging volcano, tormented by inner demons, the likes of which mere mortals cannot fathom.
Yeah.
Is it a good line? Do we enjoy this?
I think that's a good line. That's the kind of thing that must have been so much fun for the screenwriters to write that language, you know.
Sure. Yeah,
I think it works okay. I'm plus minus on it.
Well, and it's, you know, it's Sam is so taking everything so seriously, so of course he does have
gravitas.
He's Captain Smollett's hype man,
right? Gonzo likes it too, because then Gonzo says he's got demons. Cool.
Yes.
Which is like a very I like that. It's funny.
I do like that one.
Because it's a pretty intense thing for Gonzo to be excited about, I think.
Yeah.
It's like demons, yeah. I mean, Gonzo did sell his soul to the devil in the Alice Cooper episode. Lest we forget.
Right.
He eagerly signs up. Like, that's not even subtext.
Right, yeah, yeah, he's into it.
Yeah.
I've had one thing from the DVD commentary. When we see, there's a few different shots of the horse and carriage just moving very quickly, thunderously, causing all kinds of chaos in the streets. Brian Henson says the carriage is riding down a 40-foot street in the studio, because this is all shot on a soundstage indoors.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it's just a 40-foot street, and they had to shoot it repeatedly from every possible angle to make it look like it's longer than it actually is. So that's movie.
Yeah, do you think that it was necessary to have the whole horse-drawn carriage introducing the captain? Or could they have just, you know, had the cabin door open or something? Like, was it worth it?
I kind of think it was, personally, because we get, like, I wrote down here, after Gonzo says he's got demons, cool, we cut back to the carriage arriving, and it's 25 seconds, just, like, watching it drive, people run, Muppets are jumping out of the way, someone yells, maniac!
Yeah, there's an old lady Muppet who, like, pulls children
close. I was going to say, he's my second MVP for the clip. Tim Curry's eyebrow and whatever Jerry or Attrick that lady is.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it sounds like it's Dave, probably, right?
Yeah. I think it does.
Yeah, I like that part.
And it's just like, we've talked about how one of Brian Henson's real talents as a director, I think, is that he likes to just kind of like let tension build and let moments play out.
Yeah.
And this is a good example of that. Because I think in the opening credits of this movie, right, it says Kermit the Frog as Captain Smollett.
And also this upcoming scene is in all the trailers.
The Kermit's introductory moment is in all the trailers. Yeah, right.
That's true.
But still, like, even knowing that it's Kermit, it's nice that they build it up so much.
Right. And I've seen this with an audience, and that does get a laugh every time when Kermit is revealed. So I think the build up with all the tension helps to make that so fun.
Well, and we're 28 minutes into this thing, and this is the first time we see Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which is unprecedented. I mean, he's introduced immediately in every other movie, even Christmas Carol, where he's not in the opening song. He probably shows up in minute 7 or something, right? Like, it's the credits, yeah, and then it's the Scrooge song, and then it's right, Bob Cratchit at work.
In Scrooge's workplace, right.
Yeah. So anyways, yeah, then the door opens and a large, intimidating, grumpy-looking man comes out. Muppet Wiki doesn't list this actor's name, which I thought they might. I thought there might be like a page. Yeah.
I looked at the end credits trying to figure out if there was a name listed for this character to figure out who the actor was, but I didn't see anything, so I don't know.
I was going to say, I actually don't find this guy that intimidating. And maybe I'm alone there, but...
No, right. He looks like a very, like, he has like a real, like, comic character actor look, right? Like, he looks like he's playing some sort of Charles Durning or David Huddleston, or, you know, like, just kind of like a grumpy,
yeah,
grumpy uncle, I mean, type.
Maybe having like a grizzled guy with an eye patch would be too much, but I also think this is a missed opportunity for a real cameo. The name I came up with was Alan Rickman, but I'm sure there were plenty of British like villain type character actors who could have done this part and made it actually feel like it could have been a real fake out type of a scene. And it, I guess it doesn't feel like it when it's just like, oh, there's an extra we found down the street and he's,
yeah, man, that's a really good idea. Like, yeah. I love that. The idea that Alan Rickman or Jeremy Irons or, whoever, I'm trying to think mid 90s, or even, it doesn't have to be British, it could be Willem Dafoe or something, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then it's just kind of like, oh, nope, that's just the footman, and then he never appears again.
Yeah. You know, now that you said Willem Dafoe, I like that, because he's got that look that just instantly creeps a lot of people out.
Exactly, right. Yeah, yeah. In a good
way. Huh. Yeah, I mean, this guy, he looks very serious. I don't know how scary he is, but he does look like maybe the guy at the bank who would deny you for a loan. Maybe not.
Which can so be scary, but
yeah.
Yeah. So Joel McHale in Spider-Man 2 is what I'm hearing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure.
That's what he plays in that movie. You remember that? Remember that, Ryan?
I didn't remember that was him, actually, but Aunt May, that scene. She wants a free toaster, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Joel McHale, and then Hal Sparks is in the elevator. So there's two Talk Soup hosts in that movie for some reason.
Wow.
Nobody knows why.
No.
Sam Raimi has never gone on the record.
Wow. Okay, so those are the two mysteries we have to solve. Why are there two Talk Soup hosts in that movie, and who is this actor playing the grumpy guy and the coach?
Yes, those are the two.
Those are the two.
Muppet Treasure Island. Then of course the guy steps aside, and the actual captain is a tiny green frog who says in all the trailers, "Hi ho, everyone!" And it's our old pal Kermit. He's on Walter's watch.
He is.
Yeah.
Has he ever said "Hi ho" in a Muppet movie before this? Because that's primarily, people associate that with him, but that's primarily Sesame Street
newsflash. Sesame Street, thing. Right? It's the newsflash. Yeah. Give me a second, if you don't mind.
Is there a Muppet page for "Hi ho"? I guess I should have looked.
Oh, good. Good thing. I was just going to look up the transcripts and do a control F on them.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't imagine when he would have said that in any.
Well, maybe there were a couple of Muppet Show sketches where he was a reporter. So maybe one of those when he says, "Hi ho, Kermit the Frog here."
Yeah, he says it on Coos Bane or whatever.
Maybe. Yeah.
Man, that first Coos Bane sketch is so good.
Oh, yeah.
With the Galio Hoop Hoop. It is filthy. It is.
The miracle of life is not filthy.
Well, no, you're right.
You're right. Once again, love comes to Coos Bane.
Oh, I was also going to say that the guy with the hat who's in front of him, he's introducing him as if he's like his employee, but then we don't ever see him again. So is he work in his household, maybe? Is he his butler? He's his manservant?
Yeah, I really do think he's like, yeah, because he's not the coach driver. We got that other guy driving the coach. Yeah, maybe he does work at his house.
Hmm. Yeah, at first I was like, wait, could it be he'd just be another passenger who's just randomly taking his hat off? But he does kind of seem to be introducing him, so.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
So Captain Smollett has money, right? He's got a
Yeah, he must.
Yeah, he's well dressed.
Yeah, he must have his suits tailored because he's tiny.
Sure.
Although I guess there's other guys his size around. I don't know.
People were shorter back then.
That's true. But I just mean like we saw like, you know, I don't know, Droop or whoever. Like, you know, right. There are other people around.
He uses Droop Taylor for sure.
Yeah. Bean Bunny was at the pub.
He's even smaller than Kermit.
He is.
But pubs are for families, right? In the UK. So
I guess so. Yeah, interesting because we talked about this, how Robin and Bean Bunny are there by themselves.
Yeah, tavern. I think it's pretty common for everybody to just go. Yeah. It's not such a taboo to drink in front of your kids.
We were joking about it based on the assumption that you wouldn't bring a kid to a pub, but maybe we were completely wrong.
Well, so I don't live there. And I didn't live there in the 1700s either, but I think that's right. True. I think it's like that's just where you went to get food and drink. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Jim is serving drinks there, and he's 12.
Yeah.
So there is that, I suppose.
I mean, I've seen Mad Men kids in the 60s serve drinks to their parents, so.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. There you go. But yeah, so Kermit did not say hi-ho in any of the previous four films.
Huh. Okay.
So at least not there. I didn't scrub through every episode of The Muppet Show.
Well, yeah. Okay. But not in a movie then. Yeah.
Not in any of the movies. Yeah. But this is his catchphrase, like you said. So.
Yeah.
And then Jim is surprised. Jim says, "That's the raging volcano. He's a frog." And then Rizzo says, "Maybe he gets hopping Matt." That's where we end the clip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we don't know what he's going to say.
Maybe he gets hopping mashed potatoes.
Oh, that sounds good.
Maybe he gets hopping Mac tonight.
Ooh. Maybe he gets hopping macaroni and cheese.
But even so, like, this is such a dumb joke.
Does Rizzo know that Gonzo already made that joke in the Muppet movie?
Muppet movie, right.
When they crash the cars and Gonzo's jumping up and down and he says, "I'm hopping mad."
Yeah, but he didn't even make it about a frog. He was just talking about himself. No, that's true.
He
was him.
Yeah, he was hopping mad.
Yeah. That's why it's way funnier.
Wait, it's way funnier which time?
Yeah.
The first time, the Muppet movie.
Yeah, okay.
What? I had no idea that would be your opinion.
You didn't?
Yeah, did Jim Lewis help out with the script at all? Or was it just the other guy?
So to be clear, the question you're asking is, did Jim Lewis write this joke? It sure sounds like his style. Like, this is very much the kind of joke Kermit would make on The Tonight Show or whatever, right? Like,
yeah, and I do think those jokes have their place because the general public tends to laugh at them.
And the talk show hosts always laugh at them.
Yeah.
They do. That's true. Except for Jon Stewart.
Oh, yeah. There's that awkward Daily Show interview where
Jon Stewart is just like not into having Kermit the Frog on his talk show
at all. He's just trying not to play along.
Yeah, but then Kermit breaks him. That's what's so good about it.
You think he's not into it? Because didn't he do Elmo Palooza?
He did. That's the weird thing. He did right before that, too, because this is like 99 or... Yeah, 2000 or something like that. I mean, it's like early on in his Daily Show run.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised that he would be so hesitant to.
I think maybe he was bracing for what Bill O'Reilly would say about it. And like,
yeah, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, that's the one. That's the one ever where the host doesn't seem to be, which is weird because like he had Muppets back on later and it went fine. You know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
So that actually does bring us down to the end of the clip. Any other thoughts on these 2 minutes specifically before we go? Carolyn, I'll start with you.
I was going to say that this is the first Muppet movie that I remember being aware of coming out. Like, and I think Ryan talked about that in the first episode you guys did, that on the Prodigy and the Usenet and whatever, that I was like, oh, this is happening. And maybe there was like a grainy little picture at the bottom of the set, and so I was excited, and I when I saw it in the theater, I loved it. When I had it on home video, I loved it for a couple of years, and I don't know what happened or when it happened, but I don't love it anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
And this clip is just it's just like at every point I'm like, I see like missed opportunities, or like, why did you do it that way? Like, why even use the Muppets for this thing?
That's really the question, is why, like, it just does, It never feels like a good fit. This could also
be a generic 90s straight to DVD, like just sort of like in terms of some of the script and story elements, not the look. The look is gorgeous, but and the costumes and everything, but it's just like, I don't know. It just doesn't hit like a Muppet movie for me anymore. But the time I was so excited about it, and I would listen to the soundtrack on repeat, and I had a stupid marionette that I would dance around the living room to Cabin Fever for nobody but myself, I guess.
Well, that's true.
It's a good song to do a marionette too. It's a very jingly jangly shaky song. I'm not saying it's a good song, but you can bounce around to it.
It's jingly, yeah.
But yeah, it's at that time in the 90s, I was very excited about it, and I remember writing an angry email to some online reviewer, James something. I thought maybe one of you guys would remember.
Wait, would like, that be James Berardinelli, who's still writing reviews today? Yeah.
Is he?
He was one of the early, very prominent online film critics.
Yeah, and he did a bad review of MTI, and I wrote him such an angry email as a teenager. And he replied, and he was just like, okay.
Wow.
You feel that way. I was trying to see if I still had it in my Yahoo inbox, and I don't. But
oh, wow. I would love to read that angry email.
Yeah, I don't think I could muster that passion about much of anything anymore. But
Let alone Muppet Treasure Island.
Muppet Treasure Island. And Siskel and Ebert didn't like it. And I think a lot of critics didn't care for it at the time. But clearly it struck a chord with people who were a certain age, because it's now so many people's favorite Muppet movie. I think probably mostly people who aren't super Muppet fans, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People who just like 90s pop culture in general. And I mean, also it's pirates. Mm-hmm. So it's got that going for it.
Right.
I saw it in a theater, like later on after it, you know, was released, was with PDX Yar, a pirate group in Portland.
Was that right?
They hosted it. Yeah.
Wow.
And there were so many people dressed up like pirates, so excited to see Muppet Pirates. And so I guess it was a genre that they needed to do at some point for the sake of pop culture.
Yeah.
I guess it works well enough for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. All right. Ryan, any other thoughts?
Did we mention the fact that when the carriage is speeding along, there are live chickens, real chickens, and then we also see a few Muppet chickens?
Oh,
we didn't, but that's cool though.
I just like that. Yeah, that's kind of a weird blurring of, you know, what is this reality that, but I guess, you know, there's humanoid Muppets and there are actual humans. So why can't there be real chickens Muppet chickens?
And they did that stuff on the Muppet Show all the time.
That's true. Yeah, they would bring in real animals.
Gonzo is auditioning chickens and they're real chickens or whatever. And,
right. Yeah.
And Rolf sings What a Wonderful World to an actual puppy.
Mm-hmm. And there's a cow backstage, I think, in the Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews, yeah.
A real cow.
Oh, the Muppet Show is so good.
Yes, it is. And then, that we all agree.
It's so good. I love it. Their pirate episode with Glenda Jackson, too.
Yeah.
That's true. Should point that out to the pirate community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go watch the Glenda Jackson episode.
It's on... Disney Plus. You can go watch it anytime. So I got a few things from The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde to talk about here. The scene with Long John on the ship, it doesn't exist. They just none of that introductory. He's just kind of like, he's already met Long John and now they're on the ship together.
Sure.
You know, as I said last week. Also, everything about Captain Smollett's arrival in this scene was invented because he's Kermit the Frog, and that's the whole joke. And there's no reason in the novel to be like the carriage was careening towards the dock. Right. You know, like it's not in there. And also in the book, Samuel Arrow was actually selected by Long John Silver, Mr. Arrow. Squire Trelawney, in his letter to Dr. Livesey, says Long John Silver unearthed a very competent man for a mate, a man named Arrow. And in the book, he turns out to not be a terribly competent man. He's like drunk most of the time.
Oh, okay. So he knew he could manipulate him then, maybe.
Yes. And we will learn of his fate later, perhaps. So that's... Oh, so Carolyn, at the end, we always ask our guests two questions. The first one you basically already answered, which is what's your history with this movie?
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for that. And the other one is where now, and I have an idea, but where now do you rank it among the Muppet movies?
I think above Muppets from Space and mm-hmm. below Most Wanted, which I think is what Ryan had said. Cause I just rewatched Most Wanted and it's still really good. I still like it.
It's very good.
I would also rank, well, I don't know. I go back and forth. I was going to say I rank the Muppets 2011 under this one, but that's, I don't know. That's tricky.
You know what? I think, yeah, that's tricky for me too. Cause I actually really like Walter and I think I like 2011 more than both of you do.
Okay.
Yeah. Although we both basically like it. I think, you know, it's not like, yeah, it's not like I don't think that season I'm going to be like, this movie the whole time. Like I am with this.
No.
So
okay, but yeah, it's like middle bottom.
Yeah. Sure, yeah, that's reasonable. All right, well, that brings us just about down to the end. Listeners, you can always read toughpigs.com on the internet, on Facebook. We're just kind of roaming around the internet trying to find social media home, you know, like everyone else. You can become a patron of ours at Patreon. You can email us at movingrightalong@toughpigs.com. to tell us how you feel about cannibal jokes. You can follow Ryan on Blue Sky @MeRyanRowe, and you can follow me on Blue Sky @DurwoodClapper. You can follow Ryan on Letterboxd @MoviesAreNeat, and me on Letterboxd @ZeppoMarxist. Carolyn, where can our listeners find you and or your work online?
I mean, I'm myself on most social media platforms, and people can friend me if they want to and aren't going to be annoying.
All right, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. Thank you, as always, to Morgan Davey for designing our logo. And thank you, listener, for being a friend and for giving us a positive review and for telling all of your other friends, Rose, Dorothy, Sophia, Blanche, telling them to listen to Moving Right Along. We'll be back next week with another one. Goodbye.
Maniac.
Bye.